and Brian,
a voice of this generation.
Everybody, and welcome to episode 90 of the Ron and Brian podcast. I am Ron, as always, joined by the man who was Adam Schiff's study partner back in law school, Brian. Brian, how you doing this week, sir?
I'm feeling proud.
As you should.
I heard the number 90 episodes. That is
that's a big number.
That is a lot of content. More importantly, that is a lot of quality time that I've spent with you over the past 2 years, and that's how I prefer to look at it.
I mean, over 90 hours, easily.
Oh, I would say we must have crossed the 100. There were some episodes where we were 2 hours.
We just rambled on and on at times, but all in a good way. In a good way.
Weren't those the episodes we were doing peyote? I mean, early on, we experimented with some psychedelics, realized not the best podcast entertainment being provided when it was really just me mumbling and drooling all over myself.
I mean, if you listen to some of the earlier like episodes 1 through like 10 or 1 through 15 and you're saying to yourself, man, this audio quality is horrible. Again, it's because we were tripping balls at the time of recording those episodes. So I think we kind of got our act together and a much more professional sound and quality altogether. And quickly coming up on our 2 year anniversary, which for those of you that remember the 1 year anniversary, this is going to be as big of a party as that, probably even double that size party.
The thing is, and this is where I think it's going to be really special, is that episode 100 is, I mean, it's a milestone. I believe that's the champagne episode where we each drink I'm not doing any kind of California sparkling wine. I mean, we're going to have to do some real champagne. I'm expecting some of our sponsors and favored listeners to gift us.
That would be appreciated. I mean, buy us a bottle of champagne.
And we'll drink it during our 100th episode. But what's incredible and really just makes me just so special is that just a month after that, we will be celebrating our 2 year anniversary. It's kind of like a kid whose birthday is December 23rd. I mean, it's just going to be a special week where they get to celebrate their birthday. And 2 days later, all over again, just an incredible special week. They get to celebrate Christmas. This year, we get 100th episode immediately backed up by our 2 year anniversary. The celebration planning has already been kicked into high gear. Rumor has it Harvey Weinstein has taken the chair for our celebratory committee. He's said that he's hunting for some of the finest talent that he can get his hands on for us. I'm excited.
It's going to be a good time. Speaking of sponsors, however, as you know, we have recently started taking on sponsors for Drink of the Week. Last week, sponsored by the Trump 2020 campaign, which they had actually bought a multi-week sponsorship deal. Found out from the bank today, the check bounced. Mm. So we are now one of the many companies that Donald Trump owes money to. So because of that, we cannot continue playing. We did not get another sponsor lined up in time, so we have to go back to the old favorite.
Drink of the week.
На здоровье.
Salud.
Drink of the week.
Who's
drink of the week?
Now, if any of you out there would like to sponsor Drink of the Week, please go to ronandbrianpodcast.com. Go to the contact us page, and you can see how to reach out to us, and we can work out some deals. We are whores for the cash, so just open up that wallet, make us sing. Brian, what did you bring to the table to drink this week?
Ron, I think you're quite aware of just how important it is to me that I fit in. I mean, it's one of the things that I think categorizes, just it epitomizes who I am. It's a need that, you know, if I see that I need to be tapped into what's going on. I want to be Mr. Zeitgeist.
I mean, I remember, you know, back in the college days, you had the members only jacket,
yes.
The Zubaz jeans.
Yes.
You were wearing your Drakkar Noir cologne.
Always.
I mean, it was whatever the cool kids were doing.
Yes.
You were on top of that.
And, absolutely.
And I see that too. I look at you and I see, you know, this guy is kind of a conformist. It's kind of what he does.
Well, if conforming is normal, call me normal. So one of the things that I picked up on this past week was there's a new drinking craze going across this country that I wanted to participate in.
Really?
It's not as active on social media as I thought it would, but the major news networks, the NBCs, the CBS, ABCs, PBS, MSNBC, Fox News, CNNs. I mean, they're all talking about it. So this week, Ron, my drink of the week, I decided to pick up a six-pack of Coronas.
So you saw some sort of Corona drinking challenge on the news? I'm confused.
Oh, no, not a challenge. It seemed like a lot of people were drinking Coronas this week and wearing masks. So, you know, I didn't get a mask. But I just, you know, everybody was talking about Corona.
If I could jump in for a moment.
What do you mean?
I think you might be confusing Corona, the beer, with the coronavirus, which apparently is going to eradicate humanity.
What do you mean by the coronavirus? So is that the name of the social challenge?
It's not quite a social challenge unless you consider a social challenge trying not to pick up a deadly virus from overseas.
So people are not drinking Coronas?
You're confusing the word Corona with coronavirus. Easy to understand, but no, this is the Corona is a beer. Coronavirus is now affecting people in China, Thailand, Taiwan, Japan, Singapore, South Korea, Vietnam, and the United States.
So is that why the guy at the deli said that he did not have the special coronavirus edition? Because that's
probably
what I asked him. I kept asking if he had the coronavirus. I mean, I was holding just the, you know, a six-pack of the Corona Extra, you know, which is kind of the color of urine when I wake up in the morning.
you should really get that looked at.
Oof. I'd like to think I just need to hydrate a little bit more. But it suddenly makes sense now because he kept telling me that he didn't have the virus and then just proceeded to cough on me.
I think you should get that checked out. No, it's a big deal, Brian. As of Thursday, more than 640 people have been sickened and 17 have died since the start of the month. And the first confirmed case was in the United States the other day. I believe they quarantined someone at LAX coming in. But, you know, you can drink your Corona. I have no issue with that. You told me Corona, so I got a little shot of tequila here to start off the day. Did you get your shot of tequila as well?
Let me see that shot glass.
Oh, it's an official Ron and Brian Frosted shot glass available on our web store at ronandbrianpodcast.com. What tequila are you drinking?
I've got a bottle of Jose Cuervo Especial.
Not bad. I have the Cabo Wabo Blanco tequila. Good stuff.
Is that because you are a Sammy Hagar fan?
I like the Red Rocker, but I think he's a better tequila maker than he is a rocker, personally.
While you do your shot, I'm going to ask you a question, which is, now, what does Sammy Hagar know about making tequila? Listen, man up. If you if you grimace during a tequila shot, there's something wrong with you.
Sorry. It's a rough day. I don't know what he knows about tequila. I feel that he has surrounded himself with good people, and he puts out a very good tequila.
Really? All right. And what kind of beer are you drinking with that? You need to wash it down.
I do. I unfortunately did not have any Coronas in the fridge as I thought. So I'm going with a Yards Brewing again from Philadelphia, their Summer Breeze, which is a nice citrus wheat beer.
Summer Breeze makes me feel fine, rolling through the jasmine in my mind.
Wow, we nailed it, my friend.
Literally, we should be at the Grammys tonight.
Are the Grammys tonight? Am I missing that?
I know they're always, aren't the Grammys on a Sunday?
I have no idea. I haven't watched them in years.
Let me ask you a question, my friend.
Yes.
I was hoping that this was going to be the last week that we were going to be drinking pedestrian beers.
Okay.
All joking aside.
Yes.
This was the week that my Tavor box, Tavor crate was going to be shipped out. I actually was notified today that my Tavor crate was shipped. I got excited.
So it's on its way. It's its way towards you.
My heart palpitated. I looked out the window to see if the delivery person was walking up my block. And I had a little bit of a disappointment. Going to have to tell you something here.
Why? What do you got to tell me? Talk to me.
It says that the expected delivery date is February 5th.
Ooh. Well, I mean, sometimes it can take a while. I mean, it's a big box. They gotta pack it up. They got to make sure that it is safe to transport, and then they got to get it to you. I will tell you from previous experience, if you're in a major city, it tends to get to you a little bit quicker.
So this could actually be worse were I not living in the greatest city on this world.
I mean, if you were in like Omaha, it probably would take quite a while for it to get to you.
I would imagine that, based on our experience, realizing that the difference between New York and Pennsylvania, options on Tavor, but I'm surprised that Omaha, Nebraska would even have breweries to serve.
I did not make it to any of their breweries while I was out there.
However, if you do want to try the Tavor, and I know we've trashed it over the last couple of weeks, but if you want to get $10 off, use our code. This is a special Ron and Brian podcast Tavor code, 525401, and you're going to get $10 off your first crate. Now, I will say this. It's more expensive than I thought it was going to be, or I have a drinking problem.
I counted up my crate the other day. I feel like I am pushing about 30 total bottles and cans in there.
Fuck?
So it's probably I have an issue as well.
You said 30? Oh my God. I was about to, this just shows the Jew in me coming out. I was about to complain about 12. I'm like, this box is costing me $108 and I was going to bitch about it.
See, this is how I look at it, is you're paying $15 in shipping, regardless of how much they send you.
Right.
So clearly that per bottle or can shipping price goes down significantly the more that you buy. So like right now, it's costing me like 50 cents a bottle to ship.
Yet it's costing me over $1 a bottle to ship.
Now, I probably had to spend, close to $300 for that to happen.
Right.
But I feel at the end of the day, it's worth it.
Now, do you do crates every month? Like, is this just standard box for you?
No, I don't. Because, again, I'm usually getting, 15, 20, 25 cans or bottles every time. So, I go quite a few months in between. Like, you just can't drink beer that fast. I mean, I guess you could. You just shouldn't drink beer that fast.
But we're also getting some really interesting beers.
I'm looking forward to the crate we're getting, and then we can put out a drink of the week poll for some folks to choose between beers that we are both getting.
I mean, I've got some. I mean, it felt like a heavy on the stout.
It's time of year for stouts. Apparently. It's wintertime. People put the stouts out this time.
So I've got heading my way. I'm expecting Snowed In Mocha from the Copper Kettle Brewing Company. I'm looking for a Mocha Vanilla Stout from the 903 Brewers. Anchorage Brewing Company is putting out Medusa, and I'm just going to bore the fuck out of you by reading every single beer in my crate. Just kidding. I'll skip ahead. This one I'm really looking forward to. This is Energy City Brewing's S'more Stout. I think that's going to be a nice one. I even bought two of those.
Fancy.
Ron, what are you looking forward to in your Tavor code? 525-401. Save $10 on your first purchase, because that's going to make money for Ron and Brian. It's a way for you to sponsor the hard work that Ron and Byron are doing, because we really care. And I'm waiting for Ron to cut me off yet.
I am looking forward to, well, Fluffaloofagus from White Elm Brewing. Ironically, out of Lincoln, Nebraska. I didn't realize that when I got it, that it was a Nebraska product. But that is a toasted marshmallow imperial pastry stout that I'm looking forward to. What else did I have here? There is that Mocha Vanilla Stout from 903. I got that also. A little something from the Brewing Project in Eau Claire, Wisconsin, called Orange Drank, which is three kinds of citrus fruit plus marshmallows. And then I just picked up one with the unfortunate name of Brony from Illuminated Beer Works in Chicago. That is Dank Matuka, Berry Blasted Huel Melon, and Tropically Zesty Citra Hops.
That sounds good.
But that's a Brony IPA. Mm.
Now, the other difference that in terms of the situations we're in is that you're in a house, I'm in an apartment, and true, you've got the beer fridge downstairs.
I've got an entire basement that I fill with beer and wine.
Now, is there any way that you can make that truly like your area?
I mean, it's close. You know, I mean, I have all my Yankee paraphernalia hanging up down there, but, you know, I still have to share a little bit of the space.
And there's no way that you can move her stuff upstairs and just kind of lock the door and...
Are you saying kind of just segregate myself from my wife and just live in the basement forever?
No, I'm not talking about segregation. I'm talking about separate but equal, in the sense that you get the basement, but she gets an area upstairs that's just for her, kind of like maybe your bedroom.
I'll have to look into that.
If only there was some way I could ask her in person.
Well, hopefully you'll see her one of these days.
That would be special. I have a lot of fond memories of your wife. She's no. I didn't mean that inappropriately. I mean, she's a fun person.
Very inappropriate.
I did not mean it that way. Your wife is a fun person to socialize with.
That sounded inappropriate also.
She is like a 250-meter race. You know, she's not a marathon. You know, you're not going to be hanging out at 2 a.m. in the morning with her. That woman,
she's not there for a long time. She's there for a good time.
And hey, listen, can you? That's your wife you're talking about. Show some respect.
Sorry. All right. Well, let's keep things rolling here with This Week in Racism.
This
week
in
racism.
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 So again, not a lot of racism over the past week. Certainly not any candidates that we could put up against our two-time defending champion, Patricia Zammit. So we are going to let her stay on the bench another week, and we shall see what comes in the upcoming week, if there's any real good racism we can get out there for you. But this story jumped out at both of us today that we just had to get it out there. This is a Detroit man, Santor Thomas, who is now suing a Michigan bank for refusing to cash a check. Ironically enough, it was a settlement check awarded to him in a racial discrimination lawsuit. Brian, does it get any more ironic than that?
That's right up there.
I mean, so this gentleman, apparently he sued, let me see if the name of his company is here, yes, Enterprise Leasing Company of Detroit. The employer decided to settle with him. So he goes to TCF Bank in Michigan, tries to deposit these checks. They felt that they were fraudulent, so they called the police on him. Even though he even called his employment law attorney while at the bank to explain to the bank employees that the check was authentic, they even sent over his federal court complaint to show that the settlement matched what was in the court documentation, but still did not want to take care of him. So he wasn't arrested or charged, but he felt that he was discriminated against. He felt very humiliated by the whole experience. And then 12 hours later, managed to open a new account at a Chase bank in Detroit, where the checks went through with no issue.
That's pretty bad.
It's not, from an optic standpoint, doesn't look great.
Oh, I think 2020 is the year of optics.
It's all about the optics. I thought 2020 was the year of cancel culture.
No, 2019 was the year of cancel culture. We are canceling cancel culture this year.
All right.
We are going to be holding people responsible for their actions this year, but we're going to do it in a way in which they aren't punished so much as provided a safe environment where they can learn the errors of their ways.
All right, sounds fair. And apparently 2020 will be the year of eradicating humanity with this coronavirus.
Now, what's the deal with this coronavirus? And more importantly, and this is the thing that I'm going to ask, and I assume based on your, you know, the career that you had prior to being a full-time podcaster when you were working for the CDC, why do these new viruses always start in China?
That is an excellent question. I would imagine it might have something to do with just the sheer number of people in that country. It's just a lot of people. I don't know if the health regulations are as strict in China as they are in the United States. So possibly, you know, maybe it's a cultural issue. I believe, didn't the coronavirus start based off of eating certain animals?
The current working theory that they have is that it is linked to a wholesale animal and fish market, which has over 1,000 stalls selling live chickens, pheasants, bats, marmots, venomous snakes, spotted deer, and the organs of rabbits and other wild animals, such as bushmeat. The immediate hypothesis now is that the coronavirus is from an animal source that has quickly mutated to allow for human-to-human contact. Not that I know anything about this virus.
And apparently, I mean, does it say exactly why it's apparently fatal?
Well, it's very similar to pneumonia in terms of the symptoms. So it starts off with an elevated body temperature in the form of a fever, then perspiring, sweating excessively, which I have when I eat hot, spicy foods. But really, then what happens becomes the pooling of liquids in the lungs. And that is what is apparently starting to kill people.
I can imagine the elderly and the young are probably the most susceptible to potentially passing away from this virus.
I like to call that Darwinism.
It's culling of the herd, survival of the fittest.
Well, when you think about it, the elderly, they've already lived their life. They have already produced what they can for society. They're now just basically they're leeches, vacuums of off of others' hard work. Children. They really have not offered anything so far in their lives other than the potential for future efforts.
All right. I started reading this new book last night called Station 11 by Emily St. John Mandel. And it the premise of the story is it starts out with this like super flu breaking out in society that eradicates most of the human population. So I read like the first few chapters of that book, and then I see today that like this coronavirus is like spreading, and I'm, of course, my conspiracy theory mind is like, this is it. This is the end of civilization. Got to figure out how to live off the land again.
Now, how does that make you feel?
I don't know. I don't know that I could live off the land. I'm not going to lie. I am not, I'm not a hunter. I'm not a gatherer. I'm not handy with tools. I am used to a life of leisure, and God help me if it ever goes away.
I had a moment this past weekend, and we can talk about it later with my foray upstate and my entree into gun culture, which I forgot to add on the things we need to talk about this week. But this weekend I was talking to a man who is a hunter. And who does hunt animals for food. And he was talking about the efforts that he goes into when killing an animal, to claim the meat and how much meat he has in his freezers. And he has multiple freezers for different types of game. And it as he was talking, it literally made me realize how dependent I am on our current food delivery system. That if they just stopped delivering food to my supermarket, I literally would have no idea where to get food.
And this I don't even remember how to clean a fish anymore.
Well, that's because you were a Boy Scout. You once knew how to clean a fish. I would just eat it, scales and all.
Back in the day, I knew. Not anymore.
And I didn't even know that there were that you had to descale a fish until recently, watching videos on, I think it's Twitter, is where I like looking at my fishermen cooking their fish.
It's a very weird kink, but all right, I'm gonna let you have it.
Listen, Ron, if that's the weirdest kink that I can talk about aloud, then it says a lot about what actually is going on inside this head.
Very true. All right, let's keep it moving on.
Ron and Brian's Beef of the Week.
Beef of the Week. So if I can start this week, Brian. And again, it's a minor beef, but it's a beef nonetheless. My beef is with LinkedIn.
Whoa.
The website where supposed professionals connect.
Of course.
Is that as I move up in my professional career, all my bosses were like, oh, you got to be active on LinkedIn. You got to be active on LinkedIn. And the more I read LinkedIn, it's just like a very catty, lower level social networking site. Worse than Facebook or Twitter. And like the one thing I noticed a lot this past week, it's such a shit ton of humble bragging that goes on in a lot of these posts. Yes. Where people are like, I hired somebody this week. He wasn't the most handsome candidate. He didn't make eye contact.
He wasn't the most qualified candidate.
His hand was very clammy when I shook it. He had a slight odor about him. But I saw something inside of him, and I hired him. And I think he's going to be a great employee. Hashtag no judgment. Mm-hmm. And, like, I see three or four of these a day. And it's like, great, you hired somebody. Congratulations to you. You weren't a dick and discriminated against someone. It drives me up a wall, this website. It makes me angrier than Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook combined.
I think that you need to pay less attention. And this is really the major fall of social media. And I'm linking LinkedIn. I mean, it is social media. It's just from a more professional slant. But really, one of the biggest problems I have with it is that it is not about taking in information, but it's about sharing your information with others. I don't think that there are people that are reading those posts and taking them seriously. I think there are some people who are whores and respond to those types of posts because they want their name somehow out there as well. I see shit like that all the time, and I just skip right over it, skip right past it. What bothers me are the people who go on LinkedIn and post things that have nothing to do with their career or workplace. That's the one
or
that
with anybody's career or workplace.
I've got people that post jokes, yes, in my network.
And then you get the argument in the comments section where people are like, you guys are just turning this site into Facebook. It's like, no, this is much worse than Facebook. Or the hashtag rise and grind crew that's like, hey, I was up at 3:30 today because I had to make my flight at JFK at 5, landed in Chicago, wheels down at 9 a.m., in my hotel room showering at 10 a.m., and then made that presentation at 11, closed it by noon, hashtag boss babe.
I'm picking up a hint of jealousy. Not gonna. It seems like you are a little upset. Maybe I'm wrong here, but it sounds like you are. I know you're not an early riser. I know you're not a morning person. So maybe you're a little irritated that there's others that can wake up super early, can get shit done during the time that you're still sleeping, And by the time you're out of bed, they've already been more productive than you're going to be.
Listen, it's like that Army commercial. You know, they're more productive by 8 a.m. than most of us are the rest of the day, which is fine. But you're doing your job. So why are you patting yourself on the back for doing your job in a forum like that?
Because the world I think it's expectation. LinkedIn is social media. It is a professional Facebook, but at the end of the day, it's the same thing. We're in a society where people pat themselves on the back for everything.
Listen, let me have my beef.
Oh, it's an awful beef. Don't get me wrong. I think it's your beef, Ron.
All right. What's your beef this week, Brian?
I'm going to take it in a slightly different direction. My beef of the week is the cleaning staff in my office building.
Interesting. Are they not doing a good job for you?
Well, I'm going to tell you about a scenario that I encountered this afternoon, and you tell me if they're doing a good job or not.
So all right.
The men's room on my floor has three stalls in the bathroom. So right off the bat, there's a certain function that I am looking to partake in when I walk into the bathroom. And no, I know you're thinking that I'm going to shoot up some heroin. I don't do drugs, Ron. It's
okay,
not my
good,
style.
Good.
So, so there's nothing nefarious about what I'm doing in the bathroom. So I go into the bathroom, three stalls. Look at the first one. There is a dark shit stains on the back of the bowl.
Ooh.
Like, not even like a brown. This was... did you ever see the South Park where Cartman is doing punishments for parents, where he's obtaining different shit colors and he's going to paint your parents' house in shit?
Yes.
Okay, so he has the different swatches of shit. This was a really dark brown, almost a black, and it was all on the inside back of the toilet. I looked at it and I was like, ugh. So I move on to the second stall. Now on this stall, I open up the door, and now there is actually smeared shit on the top of the toilet seat.
That's impressive.
I say, fuck that. I go into the third stall, toilet seat clean.
So that's the one you choose. That's the one you're going with.
I layer the toilet seat. I'm in public, so two layers of toilet paper across the toilet seat. And it is at this point I realize that there is shit stains on the side of the toilet paper that I've just touched.
Ooh, so that's not good. That is a bad thing to have happen. Did you set yourself on fire at that point?
No, I ran to the bath. I ran to the sink across from the stalls, immediately washed my hands. And you know I've got some germ issues, especially
yes,
when it comes to fecal matter. So I washed my hands. And now I'm trying to figure out what stall do I take my dump in? One, two, or three? One has the shit stains on the inside of the toilet on the back end.
Okay.
Toilet seat is unsullied.
Okay.
The second stall, the interior of the toilet, clean. Toilet seat has a brown smear on it.
All right.
Third stall, the toilet paper has shit stains on it.
I'm thinking you got to go with number one.
Really?
Well, you know, again, it's inside the bowl, but the seat itself is clean. The toilet paper itself is clean. To me, it would seem to be the best option.
I went two.
Really? You went with the poop on the seat? And is the two the middle one?
Yes.
See, now that to me, that to me is straight like serial killer mentality, because you've got three toilets in a row.
Yes.
So if you sit in that middle stall, the next person that comes in that bathroom has to sit next to you.
Correct.
Can't be helped. You
Correct.
Should only, in that type of situation, you should only ever use the left or the right, because
well,
that
the problem
way it
was-
gives people the option.
The left had a large volume of shit on the inside of the bowl, and what concerned me was based on the pressure that I was feeling in my lower abdomen, I theorized that a quantity of fecal matter I was going to expel. So I was really scared of blowback which may contain shit material from someone else. That was what scared me away from number one.
You were going to have like a bazooka type situation happening, and you felt it was going to dislodge something and send it back up your way.
Yes. I knew stall number three I'd already walked out of because somebody had smeared shit on the side of the toilet paper. So even just the effort of wiping, I was going to get shit all over my hands. So what I did, I went back to two and I hyper layered the back of the toilet seat and I sat towards the front while doing my business.
I mean, I guess that's one way to handle it. Other way, you could have just quit your job and never looked back. That possibly could have been the best way to handle it.
Just abandoned my jacket and my bag, just left just and like, never
returned.
You know returned.
What? I'm going home, folks. Going home for the day. Screw y'all. Right.
I did have another option, which I didn't think of at the time, which was to go to a different floor of the office building.
I was wondering that. I was wondering if you had the option to just go to another bathroom.
Didn't enter my mind.
This is how you can really tell how far down we've come as a society is the way that individuals utilize public restrooms.
How so?
It's animalistic. Like people would never do that. Like people would not shit on top of a toilet seat in their own home. But if they're in public,
correct.
Hey, yes. Why not?
Yes.
Like it is just people will pee on the floor. We had someone at one of the hotels I worked at that would take a shit and then put it in whatever empty locker was available in the locker room.
No.
Yes.
They would take a shit and then they would take it out of the toilet and they would put it in a locker?
We're not even 100% sure if they would shit in the toilet or if they would just shit into into their hand and put it into the locker. I've been at places where people would literally just shit on the floor. Like it wasn't even a case of, they were hovering above the bowl and they might have missed. No, it was a good it was right at the front of the stall. So Ron, they were just squatting and pooping.
You do work in Philadelphia, so I think in some way you have to cut the your fellow citizens a little slack on this one.
I guess. Well, let's get past poop conversation. Let's get on to the exciting stuff, Brian. NFL Super Bowl time. First off, congratulations. You knew that the Niners were the real deal.
I did it.
You took the Niners giving 7.5. Packers tried to make a comeback there. Could not do it. You nailed that one. So props to you, San Francisco, representing the NFC in the Super Bowl.
I'm not going to pat myself on the back too much, considering that we did not wager this week. I wish we had, because if I'm not correct, I've lost the last two wagers. And I will, I believe I will be picking up dinner the next time we see each other.
That is true. Well, you know what next week is, though?
Super Bowl.
It's Super Bowl betting time. We'll do all of the bets.
Will we be doing a Ron and Brian box pool for the Super Bowl?
Why, it's funny you mention that, Brian, because yes, we are. We are doing the Ron and Brian Super Bowl pool for $5 a box. If you go to our Facebook page or our Twitter page, we do have a link to where you can go pick some boxes, and then you just go to our web store at ronandbrianpodcast.com to pay for said boxes. Pretty simple, 10 by 10, 100 boxes, randomly selected numbers, and then we will give out cash prizes at the end of each quarter. Big money involved.
And we're not making any money. We're not going to profit off of this in any way. All the money that's going into the pool in terms of entry fees will be distributed back to the winners of each quarter.
For the most part.
What?
We're covering some administrative expenses.
So we're going to be like Wounded Warriors.
We'll break even. Let's put it that way. We're only holding like $25 back.
Out of what? Every $5 entry?
Yes. We're holding more money out than we're taking in. No, so first quarter winner gets $75. Winner of the second and third quarters gets $100 each. And then the winner at the end of the fourth quarter gets $200.
Hmm. That actually... So I think I might sign up for a couple boxes.
I mean, I feel as far as Super Bowl pools go, ours is the most charitable. The only one you should really do.
How much is it per entry?
Only $5 per box.
That's very... I have paid way more than $5 to get a box.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I can't even imagine. And, you know, box 69, still available.
Nice.
At this moment. I can't say it'll be available when you go there, but you can definitely pick that up. Okay. So, yeah, so everything has to be in by noon on Super Bowl Sunday. You have to pick your boxes, pay for them on the website, ronandbrianpodcast.com. If you just go to the web store on ronandbrianpodcast.com, there is also the link that shows you how to get to the Super Bowl pool. So join, make some money. It's why we watch sports to begin with. Big sports week, not just for Super Bowl ramping up, but we did have the Major League Baseball Hall of Fame announcement, and our man, our captain, Derek Jeter, going into the Hall of Fame, almost unanimous. One vote shy of being a unanimous win.
Now, the question here is, how do you feel about Derek Jeter not winning a place on every ballot from the Baseball Writers Association?
I am hard pressed to imagine how you would think Derek Jeter does not belong in the Hall of Fame. Now, I know there has always been some discussion about people feeling that Derek Jeter was overrated and everything else, but I mean, 5 world championships, was it? Mm-hmm. 14 All-Stars, numerous Golden Gloves, over 3,000 hits. I mean, if you look at the average individual that is in the Baseball Hall of Fame, and you look at stats and career achievements, I would say Derek Jeter exceeds each and every one of those.
I would agree with you. And at the same time, I think that we've now hit a point where there is almost this expectation that if you are Hall worthy, everybody has to agree that you're Hall worthy. You know, if you think about the history of the Baseball Hall of Fame, it's been in existence for, 152 years, I believe I read this past week.
Something like that.
Yeah, 152 years the Baseball Hall of Fame has been in existence. And it took until last year for the very first player to be the unanimous entrant into the Hall of Fame. So it's almost like Mariano Rivera raised the bar, and now everybody's expecting that is where where everyone subsequently should come in at. Don't think that's necessarily true.
No, I agree with that. And again, you look at some of these numbers, you know, 3,465 career base hits, 6th most in history, scored 1,923 runs, 10th most in history, 2,747 games played, 29th in history. But again, it doesn't matter. At the end of the day, unanimous or not. And in a way, I mean, while I'm a huge Jeter fan, I think it also shows how special Mariano Rivera was by being the only unanimous selection for the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, exactly.
Rivera, clearly a once-in-a-lifetime player.
And which is why I think that that it's unfair to say that everybody after Mo that is Hall-worthy is expected to be unanimous. I mean, do I think Derek Jeter was a great player? Yes. Do I think he was one of the greatest? Close. Do I think that he is one of the greatest Yankees? Absolutely. Yet at the same time, Mo literally elevated the position to, you know, something that had never been seen before. That was, you know, in terms of domination, Jeter was great, but do I think that he was one of a kind? No, not at all. Incredible numbers for his career, but I'm actually quite okay with him not being unanimous. I'm not butthurt.
But again, I think it goes back to what we talked about last week. There's just a natural bias against the New York Yankees franchise in general because of the money they will outlay. But I don't think that should impact the players.
Well, at the same time, would Derek Jeter have the numbers that he did were he not playing for the Yankees?
It's a very good point. You know, with a stacked lineup, there wasn't a lot of opportunities for people to pitch around him. Right. But you know, the man just, you know, he had that ability to make just incredible plays. And I don't know that he was the most talented player on the field, but I think he was probably the most driven player on the field.
Yes, but don't you think that is why he shouldn't be unanimous? If you can honestly say that he is not the most talented, don't you feel that right there should kind of knock him out of the expectation of being one of the best?
Possibly. Mm. You won't All get right. me to admit that.
Now, the next question is another New York sports figure announcing that he is going to be retiring this week. Eli Manning, quarterback, New York Giants, or as I like to call him, the New Jersey Gents. what are your? Well, there's a lot of talk already about whether Eli is able to have expectations of being in the Football Hall of Fame. What are your thoughts on that?
You know, I think we had this conversation a while back when he was initially benched for Daniel Jones during the season, and it's a very tough call because I think he could be an incredibly average player at times. I think he could be an incredibly mediocre player at times, but on, you know, the highest stage, he also showed that he could raise his game to a very high level. You know, I mean, in the regular season, very average, 117 wins, 117 losses. But then 8-4 in the playoffs, you know, and those 8 wins were the 2 years that he took the Giants and won a Super Bowl. 7 out of those 8 wins on the road. Super Bowl MVP, both times he won the Super Bowl. And then you look at multiple Super Bowl winners that are in the Hall of Fame, like Terry Bradshaw, Joe Montana, Bart Starr. You know, obviously Tom Brady will be a multi-Super Bowl winning quarterback that'll make the Hall of Fame. But then you have someone like a Jim Plunkett, who won 2 Super Bowls and is not in the Hall of Fame. So I'm very much on the fence. I don't know where this is going to go. You know, only 2 quarterbacks in the Hall of Fame have a losing record, Joe Namath and Sonny Jurgensen.
But again, you also Joe have to Namath question. is in the Hall of Fame?
Joe Namath is in the Hall of Fame, Broadway Joe.
Wow. I didn't think he was that good. I think he's very well known for the fact that he was a New York quarterback during New York's heyday. And obviously he took the Jets to that, I was going to say World Series, but Super Bowl. against the Baltimore Colts, but I did not think that he was Hall worthy. But apparently, okay, good for him.
But you know, on the flip side, you look at, you know, in 16 seasons, Eli only made 4 Pro Bowls, was never named an All Pro, and only led the Giants to the playoffs 6 times in 16 seasons. His career passer rating of 84.1, tied for 45th all time. So.
All right,
I think it's going to be interesting.
I'm going to call it, Ron. A great quarterback in the playoffs does not make you Hall of Fame worthy based on not being a great quarterback in the regular season. Calling it now, Eli Manning, not Hall of Fame worthy.
So he's got 5 years to wait to see if that happens. I mean, I think if he has a chance, it's in his first year of eligibility. If he doesn't get in that first year, I don't think it gets any better for him after that point.
Okay. I think it makes sense to me. I'm going to go with that. Fuck so Eli.
So much damn sports, Brian. What the hell?
Yeah, you know, it's weird because we're really not usually the sports people.
We're not. Well, let's get back into world affairs with our friend at Amazon, Jeff Bezos. Who apparently was BFFs at one point with Saudi Prince MBS, connected through WhatsApp with each other. And then MBS does kind of a dick move, which you should expect for someone that kills a Washington Post journalist, hacks Jeff Bezos' phone. Brian, talk to me a little bit about what happened here.
All right, so this story is really blown up this past week because not only does it involve two of my favorite people to talk about, Amazon head Jeff Bezos, but we're also talking about the Crown Prince MBS, Mohammed bin Salam, praise Allah and everything that he does from Saudi Arabia. But it involves espionage, hacking, and my personal favorite app on my phone, WhatsApp. So apparently what Jeff Bezos earlier, I think it was last year, released some photos of him in a compromising position and attached the message, I think it was on his Twitter, where he said that he was not going to be blackmailed by anything. And if anybody had anything on him, he was happy to share it. What we now find out was the run-up to that was that during a WhatsApp conversation between Bezos and Mohammed bin Salam, praise Allah and all that is good, was the fact that during a WhatsApp conversation, Mohammed bin Salam, praise Allah and all that is good, sent him a link to a software, I believe it was called Pegasus, that allowed the operators of this software, which if you know anything about cryptocurrency, the Pegasus software was originally written by the Israeli military.
I was not aware of that.
As a hacking tool. I've done some reading on this stuff. it was also featured in Ronan Farrow's recent book, Catch and Kill, which discusses the Harvey Weinstein investigation and Matt Lauer investigation that Farrow ran. And apparently the private investigative companies that Weinstein hired to dig up dirt on Farrow and the women that were accusing Weinstein of sexual assault, the Rose McGowans, the Annabelle Sciorras, the Patricia Arquettes, the...
We get it.
Thank you, because I was running out of names. The idea is just the fact that that what they would do is that they would try to figure out how to get the software installed on people's phones so that they would be able to take control of these phones and find blackmail material. Anyway, so apparently during a WhatsApp chat between the Crown Prince, praise Allah and all that is good, as with Jeff Bezos, the Crown Prince sends Jeff Bezos a link saying you should check this link out. Bezos clicks the link. Before he knows it, suddenly the software is on his phone, and now crotch shots and nude selfies are being used against him as attempted blackmail.
But you know what was interesting is back when those photos initially came out,
right?
Didn't Jeff Bezos' ex-wife's brother take credit for getting those photos out?
Listen, if your wife is standing to be the richest woman in the world if this divorce goes through, I would say and do anything I could to piss Bezos off. I mean, wife number three, right around the corner, former Mrs. Bezos. If you hear me, I'm literally willing to debase myself in
holler
any
at
way.
Your boy.
Yes,
yeah,
holler
at your boy, Brian. Well, and you know who else was having WhatsApp conversations with MBS, as it turns out?
Jared
UK
Kushner?
Prime Minister Boris Johnson. So now the UK is wondering if his phone has been compromised in the same way.
Well, what's odd is the fact that Facebook is, it suddenly makes you realize just how much information Facebook has, because not only does it run its own app and messenger, but it runs Instagram and it owns WhatsApp.
That's too much power for one man to have, Brian.
Do you have WhatsApp on your phone?
I do, but I don't really use it.
Really? Okay.
One of my bosses goes to he goes to India. He goes to Dubai at times, so we have that if we need to communicate when he's out of the country. But yeah, other than that, I don't really use it all that much.
All right. Okay. Well, I'll make sure never to reach out to you on that.
So we talked about the coronavirus earlier, possibly eradicating humanity. Yes. Even worse, today, the Bulletin of the Atomic Scientists adjusts the infamous doomsday clock closer to midnight. It had been hanging at 2 minutes to midnight. It is now set to 100 seconds to midnight, the closest it has ever been to symbolic doom, and they credited that to nuclear weapons and man-made climate change.
Oh, so they're gonna they're popping in the fact that we are killing our planet,
basically, and it hasn't moved since 2018. At the time when it went to 2 minutes, that was the closest it had been since the Cold War, since 1953. But now, you know, seeing what's happening with humanity and with the situation with various governments around the country and with the climate change conditions, they felt the need to move it up 20 seconds.
I thought that they moved it to 2 minutes in 2018 when the Ron and Brian podcast was finally released to the masses on iTunes.
We've been trying to sweep that under the rug, so I would appreciate if you didn't talk about that.
Now, I'm not. You don't want to take credit for the Doomsday Clock going from 3 minutes to 2 minutes?
I mean, I would be all right being responsible for the destruction of humanity, I guess. But if you give people a heads up, it's not going to happen.
But don't you think that we are like one of the signs of the apocalypse right after the locusts?
Clearly. No question about it.
Right, I can live with that. It doesn't upset me in any way.
Some folks that will not be around for the apocalypse. Monty Python member Terry Jones passed away this week at the age of, 78, was it?
Yeah. Who was this guy?
You're kidding me, right?
I'm not. I'm sorry.
It hurts. It hurts a lot. I mean, he was... he was one of the original members of Monty Python. He made his directorial debut with their first film, Monty Python and the Holy Grail. He also directed Life of Brian, The Meaning of Life. And he also wrote an early draft. Not many people know this. He wrote an early draft of Jim Henson's 1986 film, Labyrinth.
Oh, and that's something he wants to take credit for?
Well, apparently a lot of his stuff was cut out by the final edit.
Okay.
But and you kind of shocked me a little earlier this week when you told me you were not a fan of Monty Python.
Not yet. It's not something that I ever really connected with. First off, there's something about British humor that does not connect well with me. I think that it is... I feel that they're talking down to me as an American.
Really?
And it's just not something that I ever really dug. I'm sorry. What was it that you were a fan of?
You know, I found it humorous. I found it. I didn't think it was highbrow at all. I think in some ways it could be very lowbrow, but in a smart way, if that makes sense. I think what's his name? John Cleese, Michael Palin, all very humorous to me. And I think you know, you would have enjoyed this. He was married for a number of years, had an open marriage, and then left his wife for someone 41 years younger than her.
Right. Well, that happens.
What else happened? This was the worst, though. He was, I don't know if you realize how he passed away, but he was diagnosed back in 2015 with primary progressive aphasia, which is a form of frontotemporal dementia that impairs the ability to speak and communicate. So
that's not good. No,
he was no longer able to give interviews by September 2016, and by April 2017 had lost the ability to say more than a few words of agreement.
Hold on a second.
Yes,
I interviewed him 2 weeks ago for the podcast. I mean,
really?
We haven't released it yet. So who was it that I spoke to?
It may not have been the Terry Jones. Are you going around talking to homeless people again?
I spoke to Terry Funk.
Oh, Pro Wrestling's own Terry Funk. Nice reference there.
Thank you.
We also lost one of the journalistic greats today, as a matter of fact. PBS NewsHour founder, host Jim Lehrer, dies at 85. Obviously part of the McNear Lehrer report.
Mm-hmm.
Moderated 12 presidential debates, more than anyone in U.S. history. I mean, you were a huge fan. I know this one hit you pretty hard, Brian.
What I found was that PBS was one of the last bastions of nonpartisan news. And
no question
about it. That was why I think I stuck out
my viewership of PBS for as long as possible, until recently when it was taken over by 24-hour coverage of Downton Abbey.
So he passed away peacefully in his sleep at home at the age of 85. Well, we say goodbye to Terry Jones and Jim Lehrer, and we also prepare to say goodbye to all of you folks that listen to the free podcast while we prepare to move on over to the Patreon edition. As always, you can go to ronandbrianpodcast.com, go to that upper right-hand corner, click on Patreon, become a subscriber, get some awesome swag and some extra content each and every week, or click on the store so you can see the link to our Super Bowl pool. Get your squares in by noon next Sunday, February 2nd. Get ready for the big game. Brian, what else do we have this week?
I think just the fact that I love you.
I love you more, my friend. So we'll have some good stuff next week. We'll have some good stories. We'll have prop bets. We'll have Super Bowl bets.
Are we not talking about how I shot a shotgun this past weekend?
Oh, we almost forgot to get Holy that in. Shit. Let's get that in real quick before we get out of here.
All right. So I think you know that one of the things about me that I hold very near and dear, a lot of it has to do with my religious upbringing, is my virginity. It's something that I have clung to for as long as possible in my life. I always felt that it was something that I had promised to God that only he would be, excuse me, that was very unwoke of me, she, that's the woker version of God, that, you know, I promised to God that she would be the only one that could take my virginity until obviously I'm talking about shooting a firearm.
Oh, yeah.
I've had hella sex in my life, but seriously speaking, I'd never held a gun, let alone discharged the firearm, up until this weekend. I had a corporate event this recently, and that's how you know you're working for a good company. When a group of coworkers says, hey, we're going to go shooting over the weekend. Do you want to join us for a couple hours? Drove to a shooting club in Westchester County.
Sounds fancy.
Throughout the year, they have live animal events. But what we did was something called Sporting Clays. It's set up very similar to a golf course where there were 18 different stations. We hit 10 of them. And at each station, you walk up to this wooden stand where the trapper releases a clay disc into the sky, going at different speeds, different heights, different angles. And you are handed a 12-gauge shotgun.
Nice.
And you get to load up the shotgun 5 times. So there's 2 bullets in the shotgun, shells. Excuse me, I really need to start using the proper terminology.
Yes, you should.
So the shotgun holds 2 shells, so you get to pull, then you have to reload. You do that 5 times, and then you move on to the next station. So I fired 100 times over the course of Sunday morning while, you know, Ron, while you were sleeping in on Sunday morning, walking around the house in your PJs, sipping your cup of coffee. I was up early at 5 o'clock, showered. I was dressed in my thermal underwear, my jeans, my flannel, my jacket. You know, I drove up, you know, it's what I would call the hashtag rise and grind crew.
You were looking pretty damn sexy, I'm not gonna lie.
You're not very familiar with that. I absolutely loved it. I would love to go do something like that again.
All right. Well, I mean, how'd you shoot? Did you connect? I mean, what happened?
I was told before the event that there was no way that I was not going to hit something.
Okay. And did you?
I would say that I hit probably somewhere between 6 and 8 of the clay discs.
I mean, that's not bad for a first timer.
I was not comfortable with it for most of the day, not going to lie. I would say that by the 7th round, I started to get comfortable in terms of not being afraid that I was going to somehow injure one of my coworkers.
Now, were you drinking while shooting?
No, not at all.
Good to hear.
There was no drinking allowed. There was no drinking allowed until we had finished our the round of 10. We went back to the lodge where we had a nice communal lunch, bowl of chili with I went with the turkey panini. And after that, we went out onto the porch. And this is where, you know, you kind of realize that, you know, sometimes it's great to be an American. Sat out on the porch with my coworkers. I brought up a bottle of scotch. We had a couple bottles of bourbon being passed around. Sat there having drinks. I smoked a cigar. It was a fun afternoon.
Very nice.
I made it back just in time for the second half of the Chiefs game.
All right. Which we both covered, so props to us on that bet.
Well, I mean, we know what we're talking about.
Yeah, I mean, we are NFL masters. And yes, so can you be by going to RonAndBrianPodcast.com, go to the store link, get involved in the Ron and Brian Super Bowl pool, just $5 a box, and you can win yourself some cash. All right, well, thank you for sharing, sir. We're going to head on out of here, move on over to Patreon land. Brian, my friend, as always, it is an honor to do this with you.
God, this is a mitzvah.